Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Ed Jordan. Ed has been on the show with us before. It's actually been about a year or so since he's been with us. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's the chairman and co-founder of the Cutter Consortium, as well as a software engineering consultant. He's also a daredevil parachutist, an alligator trainer, a sword swallower, a Himalayan mountain climber, a raconteur, advisor to Hollywood stars of ill repute, as opposed to the nice ones, a bon vivant connoisseur of McDonald's Arch Deluxe hamburgers, that's hard to say, and the author of 24 books, including The Rise and Resurrection of the American Programmer and Decline and Fall of the American Programmer, as well as the book I'm holding in my hand, which is Time Bomb 2000, which is now in its second edition. Ed, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here again.
It's good to have you with us, and you are in Taos, New Mexico. The last time I talked to you, you were actually still living in New York City.
Yeah, I was moving just about a year ago. I've been here about a year now.
In fact, you were in the process of moving when I talked to you last, and you gave me a very interesting, it sort of set the tone for our visit that day. You gave me a very interesting reason why you were moving to Taos. Do you remember what you said?
Probably something about the concerns I had about New York City.
You said you did not want to live in a town that had this many elevators in the year 2000.
Well, not just the elevators, but also the subways and the hospitals and the airports and all the things that go into making up a complex infrastructure. One of the things I really have learned over this past year, living in a much more rural area now, is it really gives you a sense of power to have control over the basic things that you all take for granted in a big city.
Being able to
power the lights and the water and everything else.
You're actually a little closer to nature too, aren't you?
Yep. Yeah.
If you could go out and get a drink out of a saguaro cactus or something like that. One of the things, folks, that I like about Ed's perspective on this is Ed was on the ground where all this stuff was going on long before anybody knew about Y2K. And sometimes there are books out there that are written, there's nothing wrong with the books, but they're written by people who are reporters or people who have become Y2K experts. Ed was involved in this issue a long time ago, and so he's vested in the background, in the perspectives that you need, I think, to get the right kind of perspectives on Y2K. And Ed, I'd like for you to talk to us a little bit about those.
Well, actually, you raise a good point. There are several important perspectives that we're going to be hearing about over the next several months. Mine is very much a technology perspective, and there certainly are lots of other very experienced computer people who can talk about this as well. We're now going to be hearing a lot from the politicians. What's the social and political perspective on Y2K, particularly internationally? I mean, we're getting more and more of an impression that even if the U.S. manages to muddle through all of this, places like Russia and Eastern Europe and several other parts of the world probably won't. We're going to be hearing a lot about the economic perspective. What's this going to do to unemployment and the overall economy? There are going to be lots of other perspectives as well. And they're all important, but you've got to remember whenever you hear any of these messages, where are these folks coming from and what is their area of expertise?
Right. One of the things that you point out is a lot of times their background and their motivations are not technology, and they have their own agenda, which is not necessarily a correct agenda.
Well, we all have our own agenda. I mean, let's face it, none of us are Mother Teresa. and some of us are a little bit more open about it than others. I've been accused by a lot of people of, trying to make money off Y2K and things like that. But it's also appropriate, I think, in some cases to look at the very upbeat, optimistic statements from government leaders and big business leaders and say, maybe they have an agenda, too. They really want you to believe that they're going to manage to finish repairing all their Y2K computer stuff. Because otherwise you might, sell their stock and abandon their products and so
right.
forth.
Well, and the politicians want to make sure that you believe that they've done all this stuff to make sure that everything's going to be just ducky in the year 2000.
Well, the politicians also have a very legitimate concern, and that is the fear of panic.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want us to run down to the bank and get all our money out. They don't want us to stop spending, because ours is very much a retail-driven and consumer-driven economy. And if all of us get scared and hunker down in our own little homes and keep our money under our mattress, there goes Wall Street and there goes the economy.
Let's talk about panic for just a second. And panic is in my opinion, in my uneducated opinion about this issue, because I don't have the background that you do, but I believe that we're going to have more problems from probably unjustified panic than we are from the real live problems that Y2K is going to present.
Well, that could well be the case, particularly if you assume that most of the real problems will be sort of economic problems. On the other hand, if it turns out that we have a chemical explosion or a nuclear problem, then all the panic will have been justified. But, yeah, you can certainly look at this and say, gee, you know, the panic possibility, you know, may be the worst thing that we have to deal with. The trouble is people tend to panic if they don't have a lot of concrete, detailed, credible information. And because of the fear of litigation, among other things, most companies, and unfortunately even many government agencies, are just clamming up and not providing the information that people need to make intelligent decisions.
If I don't spell it out and put it in writing, I don't have to eat it later.
That's pretty much it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, all right. Look, a year ago I was saying that you were moving to Taos, New Mexico, because you wanted to get out of New York City. You didn't want to be in New York City when the clock struck 2000. How do you feel now, a year later, with all the testing that's been going on, with all the new things that we know about what people have done, the accomplishments or the things that haven't happened? How do you feel now? Would you still move today?
Yeah, I feel pretty much the same as I did about the big companies and big government agencies and the big countries like the U.S. Overall, because that's being played out pretty much the same as we've always seen on large, complicated computer projects, and that is a lot of frantic activity at the end, and 80 or 90% of them will probably make it. The concern that I was starting to have a year ago, and that has gotten much worse over the last year, is the relatively slow progress, in fact, almost no progress, on the part of the very audience that you serve, the small business people,
right,
as well as the small towns and counties, and the small countries, Eastern Europe, Africa, South America, and so on. Those three areas are going to be where I think we see the major disruptions and problems.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things I want to do, we're going to take a break here in a second, Ed, and what I want to do is get you, when you come back, to help us understand the difference between the hype and the reality. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about that. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Ed Yordan, the author of Time Bomb 2000, is our special guest and our good friend. 888-822-8255. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's 24 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Ed Yordan is our special guest. Ed is the author of Time Bomb 2000, along with his lovely daughter, Jennifer Yordan, who works on Wall Street. And we're going to get him to tell us a little bit about what Jennifer thinks about what's happening on Wall Street a little bit later on in our discussion. But right now, Ed, by the way, before we go any further, I want to tell them about your website. It's yordan.com, yourdon.com. Folks, this is an outstanding Y2K website. And one of the things that I want to brag on you a little bit, Ed, that I was impressed by, I went to the site, I checked it out, got some good information off of that. But one of the things that I liked about your site is you really do care about getting, it's obvious to me, that you care about getting this information to people who need it, not just about selling your book, because, folks, on his homepage is a list of other people's Y2K books. Some of which we've covered on the show before. We've had the authors on the show before. And, Ed, I want to congratulate you on that. That says a lot about you.
Oh, well, thanks very much. Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of important information that needs to be available to people. And, you know, the book I wrote is just one of many very good sources of information.
Well, you're the kind of people that I like to introduce my audience to, because you care about getting the information out, and you believe that by doing that, you know, you'll ultimately be successful by being open and sharing that type of information. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
I want to go back to what we were talking about, all the hype and all the difference in the hype and the reality. I know that's something that you spend a lot of time talking about, is how to help people sort that out. Every minute almost of the day on the radio, especially, you can hear somebody advertising about food products and about generators and all kinds of things like that. If it's not the talk show host, it's the company that sponsors that show or whatever. And everybody, they're encouraging everybody to have 90 days of food and 90 days of water and all that kind of stuff, because, you know, in case everything shuts down. That's a lot. Is that hype?
Well, 90 days may or may not be the right number for everybody, but, you know, Y2K is just one of several disasters that, or would be, or potential disasters that we have to worry about in this country. You know, depending on where you live, it could be a blizzard or a flood or an earthquake or whatever.
Right.
So certainly everybody ought to have something in the way of preparations. you know, before Y2K came along, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, was advocating that every American have 14 days, 2 weeks worth of food and water and supplies just in case. Now, Y2K is clearly much more visible and it's much more pervasive. And, you know, depending on your views about all of this, a week might be enough, or 2 weeks, or 3 months, or 6 months, or whatever. You're right, certainly, that some of the, you know, that the hard sell advertising is giving people the impression that Y2K is going to bring about the total end of civilization, which is obviously going overboard.
Right.
But, you know, it's not at all out of the realm of possibility that local areas around the country could have power outages for a couple of days, or your own job might be, you know, shut down for a couple of days. You know, the small business owner is probably going to try to get in and keep things going no matter what, but for all the people who work in big companies or government agencies, they may find that the place has been shut down for a week, and they may not have any salary for a week or two.
Well, that's
so
the thing.
Prudent preparations are appropriate.
You know, if you've got a an old type phone, you may have an old type telephone in your business that's not computerized, and you know, you may say, well, I've got even though I've got a lot of my stuff on computer, we could do a lot of it on paper and that sort of thing. But if the local utility is not providing you with electricity, you may not be able to turn your lights on. If the water department is not squared away, then you might not be able to get water to your restaurant.
That's right. You know, if the lights are out and the phones are dead and the banks are closed, you're going to have a hard time running things.
Right. What are the chances? Tell us, what are the chances? Give us your prediction on the best and the worst cases.
Well, the kind of best case, kind of worst case, it's now being regarded more and more as likely hype, is nationwide power failures for a month or two. The most likely scenario, I think, is that we're going to have localized utility outages for short periods of time. You know, so in your particular town, the lights might be out for a day or two, but probably not the whole state, and certainly not the whole country. Similarly, you might have difficulty accessing your bank account. It's not that they're going to lose your money, but maybe the ATM machines will be down for a day or two, but not the entire banking system collapsing.
And is that because, even though they try as they might to find all the embedded chips and that sort of thing, there are going to be some that they're just going to miss, and until the calendar clicks over and the clock ticks over, they just can't find those, until they almost have to surface by being broken?
Well, that's part of the explanation. The other part has to do with the interconnections.
Stand by, Ed. I'm going to let you talk about interconnections when we come back. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Ed Yordan is our special guest and our friend. He's the author of Time Bomb 2000, and his website is yourdon.com, yordan.com. And I recommend you check that out, folks. It's one of the best Y2K sites that I've seen, and it's very even-handed. Ed makes sure that if it's information that's valuable, whether he wrote it or someone else wrote it, he puts it on his website and shares it with you. And, Ed, again, congratulations on doing that.
Oh, thank you.
You were talking about interconnectivity. We were talking about some of the – I had just said something like, One of the ways we're going to find out where some of the failures are is we won't know until they fail. And you said that you were talking about the interconnectivity between some of these small cities and I guess companies too, with their suppliers and that sort of thing.
Well, it's everything, phone companies, utilities, and so on. Even if you assume that they're all doing a very good job of testing their own computer systems, the ones that are under their direct control, everybody's connected to everybody else. With regard to phones, for example, it turns out there's some between 1,200 and 1,400 little teeny-weeny telephone companies across the United States that only represent 2% of the overall traffic, but there's some risk that that they could cause problems for the AT&Ts and GTEs. Same thing with the banking system. The American banks are probably the best prepared of any industry in this country, and they'll probably have their stuff working, but if the lights are out, it's kind of hard to operate. If the phones aren't working, they're going to have trouble, you know, transmitting stuff back and forth to other banks. And if the foreign banks aren't working, which is actually our biggest concern, it's going to eventually cause trouble.
Let's move into some of the sectors of the marketplace. These are some of the things that I want to make sure we got out of you while you were here. Let's talk about the banking industry. Where is the banking industry in the United States?
Well, as I was saying a moment ago, they're probably going to be the best prepared. They have the greatest sense of urgency, self-generated, because they know that their existence depends on confidence.
And they've been spending a lot of money letting their clients know that they're working hard on this.
They're spending a ton of money. If you look at the SEC reports for all the major banks, you'll see, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. In the case of Citibank, for example, it's close to $800 million, I believe, at this point.
Right.
They're also under the most intense regulatory pressure, far more so than any other industry. You know, they're having inspectors coming around checking on their progress and so forth. Now, that doesn't guarantee that they're all going to make it. There are close to 11,000 banks in the United States, and there are bound to be a few that that have some problems. As long as it's only a few, that will be taken care of by FDIC and all the other, you know, kind of insurance things. So,
and it probably won't be a permanent meltdown for that bank.
No. I think there may be a few cases of short-term disruptions. Again, you may not be able to get access to your ATM machine for a day or two.
Right.
Or the bank itself might have to shut down if the power's out for a few days. But, you know, I don't think you have to worry about your money being lost unless there is this, you know, much-feared panic. There have been surveys indicating that something like 16% of the U.S. public plans to go down and take all its money out.
I was hearing the other day that had already started. People were already starting to do that.
I don't know whether it's shown up in the national level currency reports, but yeah, some people are already beginning. And you know, if it's only a few, if it turns out, for example, the average American family takes out enough cash to last them for a week, you know, which is not excessive, and
right,
probably adequate for most people. Well, that works out to about $500 a week for the average American family, times 100 million families.
Right.
That works out to $50 billion, with a B, in cash.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fed has already indicated that they're going to print that much extra cash just to make sure that it's in the banking system.
I think they've already done that, haven't they? I know they reported on it several months ago. And what did that do for people? I mean, did that give people comfort, or did that make them more panicky?
It probably a little of both. The fact that they announced it and got started on it as early as they did,
yeah,
obviously indicated that they were concerned, but addressing the issue. So, you know, I think the average person probably thought, okay, well, it looks like they're getting ready for it. One of the big question marks, though, which continues to plague us, is just how much of the overall currency is outside the country.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is in Russia or Brazil or places like that, where they'd rather hold our currency than their own.
They like dollars better
than they sure do. But, you know, I think of all the industries, if anybody's going to make it, it'll be the banking industry as well as Wall Street. You know, pretty much the same story there.
Let's move over to Wall Street, because your daughter, Jennifer, who's the co-author of your book, Time Bomb 2000, and by the way, before we go any further, tell our audience where they can get your book.
They should be able to find the book at any of the major chains, Barnes & Noble, Borders, you know, the usual bookstores.
Right.
Plus, they can find it on the Internet at Amazon or the online Barnes & Noble places.
And they can order it from your website, too, right?
They certainly can. Yeah, they can go to my website and order it there.
YOURDON.com. Let's continue to talk about the financial sector. And you're, as I said, Jennifer works. You were telling me reminding me that Jennifer works on Wall Street. And what is she seeing up there on Wall Street as far as their preparation and their reaction to Y2K?
Well, Wall Street, like the banks, is very concerned about their own computer systems and maintaining the confidence of their own customers. So they've been working very hard. In fact, they are probably about the only industry that has conducted fairly thorough so-called end-to-end testing, where they're making sure that, you know, a stock trade initiated by one broker can go all the way through the stock exchange and all their computers and so on.
Right.
What they're not doing very much of, according to my daughter, who watches it every day, is the kind of due diligence you would expect in terms of the companies that they invest in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your stockbroker calls you up and says you really ought to buy 1,000 shares of XYZ company, it would be nice to know that XYZ company is going to be Y2K compliant. And they're not doing a very good job in that area at all.
Very interesting. Ed, stand by. We've got to take a break, folks. It's 39 after. When we come back, we're going to get Ed, among other things, to tell us whether he thinks you should go ahead and have your stock certificates issued to you rather than being held by your broker. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We are back. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, a small business advocate. Our special guest is Ed Yourdon. And I've got something. I want to point out a little bit of a interesting issue here before we get back into the subject that we were talking about. We took our last break, Ed, but there's a guy out there whose name is Ed Yardini, and he is an economist for Deutsche Bank, right?
That's right. You know,
and he is often quoted, folks. You often see Ed Yardini name in paper, in the papers, and on television, on whatever. And he's an economist. He's been very vocal and very visible in the Y2K issue. Even though he's an economist, he's not a technician in the same way that Ed Yordan, our guest today, is. And I wanted, Ed, I just wanted to bring that up because whenever I see his name, I know it's not you, but I think of you. And of course, that's a good thing, I guess, if I think of you. But I wanted to make people real. I want to make sure people realize that there's an Ed Yordan, who is our guest and the author of Time Bomb 2000, and then there's an Ed Yardini. And he also takes a little bit more of a pessimistic view than you do about what Y2K is going to be like.
Well, I know. I think I can out-pessimism him. But he is one of those prominent economists on Wall Street. He was the earliest predictor of the current bull market that we now have, a PhD from Yale, brilliant man. And he's got an excellent website, by the way, if you want to see a lot of detail about the potential economic impact, not only within the United States, but also in terms of international stuff.
Right.
His website is also the same as his name, www.yardeni, that's YARDENI.com.
Okay.
I highly recommend.
Yeah, well, good. And folks, I told you, Ed's a good guy. He's Ed Yordan is a good guy because he wants to make sure you get the right information. Ed, I appreciate you sharing that information with us. I might get Yardeni on the show. As a matter of fact, it might be fun to have both of you on one day.
Well, we've been on panels together.
Have you? So, I bet you have.
And described as Siamese twins separated at birth.
That's pretty funny. Let's go back to the question I asked you. I have seen a checklist, and one of the things that the checklist, the Y2K checklist, said was have your certificates issued to you before the end of the year. What do you think about that, your stock certificates?
Well, some people will want to do that just to, you know, to have a feeling of comfort. Of course, then you run the risk that they might be stolen or lost or whatever. I'm less concerned about the Wall Street firms losing track of, you know, what shares I own than I am about more subtle risks. A lot of people these days own mutual funds, and I would strongly recommend you read the fine print of your mutual fund prospectus because they will outline some Y2K issues there in terms of whether or not you're insured for Y2K losses, what's going to happen if you decide that you'd like to cash in your mutual fund. I think those issues are more important than having the physical pieces of paper
right
in your hands.
Okay, good. Thanks for that advice. What about the nuclear plants in America?
Well, there are 103 at the moment, and they're coming under more and more intense scrutiny. There's a report coming out next week on April 30th from the North American Electric Reliability Council, which will summarize the status of, I believe, both the nukes and the non-nuclear plants through the first quarter of this year. The nuclear plants are supposed to be completely finished with their repairs by July 1st, or according to the original administrative edict from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they would have to shut themselves down. My guess is that the deadline will be extended for a few that are close but not quite finished. And if I had to predict this, I would say that when the dust settles at the end of the year, you might see a few, like 3, 4, 5, or, you know, some small number of nuclear plants shut down until they can finish repairing their systems, but these days none of us are anywhere near as concerned about the U.S. nuclear plants as we are about the other ones.
You don't think what is the percentage of some kind of a meltdown in the United States as a result of Y2K?
Zero in the United
States.
You
think it's zero?
The nuclear cores, you know, the actual reactor is not controlled by digital computer systems. That's not the problem. It's the surrounding systems, the safety systems.
Right.
The radiation monitoring systems, all that kind of stuff. That's where the risk is. But no, we're not going to have a Chernobyl in the United States.
All right, what about in other parts of the world?
Well, there are a total of 432 nuclear plants worldwide. We've got about a quarter of them. And, you know, some of them are in France and Germany and places where presumably they're looking after it. But the greatest worry, and this was voiced just yesterday or the day before by Mr. Koskinen, who heads up our country's Y2K effort, our greatest concern is the Russians. You know, their entire economy, as you know, is collapsing. The nuclear workers have not been paid in months. The technology is very old. And there really is a concern about another Chernobyl there. At the very least, we're concerned that they may have to shut down. Even if they don't explode, they may shut down, you know, leaving Russia in a terrible position during the wintertime, as well as Germany. Germany gets 40% of its power from Russia. So if the Russian plants shut down, there are going to be a lot of cold, hungry people.
Very interesting. One of the things I thought was an interesting quote from the deputy prime minister of Russia. He said that basically, and I'm paraphrasing, that basically he didn't need anybody's help with Y2K as far as their nuclear capability was concerned, but that they would need Western help to help pay for computer repairs. I thought that was an interesting comment for him.
Yeah, they're looking for $3 billion. I'm not sure they're going to get it. And frankly, at this point, even if we rode over there with a plane full of dollar bills, it's
right.
virtually too late for them to get most of their computer systems fixed. They'll get 10 or 20 or 30% fixed compared to our 80 or 90% fixed.
Right. What about, and we just got a few seconds before the next break, what about logistics, the transports? Are they ready?
I think the FAA will be ready. I'm not sure about the airports. The railroads are a big mystery at this point. We haven't heard much from them. Shipping is also a problem.
Yeah. Stand by. We're going to get into more of this as we wrap up the hour, folks. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Ed Yorden, the author of Time Bomb 2000, is our special guest. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's 54 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us today. Our website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. And our special guest, Ed Yorden, the author of Time Bomb 2000, also has a website. Ed, give that out, please.
It's www.yorden.com.
Okay, and if someone wanted to contact you to talk to you about hiring you to help them with their Y2K problem, some city, state, company, individual, whatever, they could call you or email you?
Yeah, the email address is the same as my name. It's ed@yorden.com. That's okay. The easiest way to reach me since I'm on the road most of the time.
Okay. All right, just send him an email. And, folks, if you would like to contact him and you don't know how else to do it, let me know and I'll make sure that you get through to him. Ed, one of the things I'd like for you to do as we wrap up the hour is to do something that you don't hear a lot of people do, and that is talk to us about what you call the three stages of the future, and that would be January 1st, 2000, 6 months later, and then a year later.
Okay. The first stage is the one that we've all been focusing our attention on, and that's the possibility of some infrastructure disruptions, the lights going out, the phone's not working, and so on. And most of us today think that that's going to be fairly localized, not going to be nationwide, and it's going to be relatively short term. So it may be January 1st, maybe a couple days, maybe a week, 2 weeks, at the outside. And then things will settle down and get into some kind of equilibrium. But for the next several months after that, I think you're going to see something roughly equivalent to a third world economy, where things sort of work but not very well. You pick up the phone and sometimes you get dial tone, sometimes you don't.
You expect that to be that way in the United States?
Oh, yeah. Especially in terms of electric utilities, there's going to be a period of months where we have brownouts and surges and spikes and...
Put a percentage on that. What percentage do you think it's going to be that the brownouts will happen?
I'd say a good 50%, but again, localized. Right. You may have it in your area and not in my area, and vice versa.
But basically, you're saying you're 100% certain that it is going to happen somewhere.
Yeah, I certainly am.
Okay.
But then by the end of the year, hopefully, we'll have been past that. But my strong belief is that the combination of the short-term infrastructure disruptions and the medium-term productivity problems, plus all the international stuff, is going to lead to an economic recession that's going to hit the small business people as badly as anybody else. So Dr. Edward Yardeni, who's a professional economist, unlike me, thinks that such a recession will only last a year or two, and then we'll go back to the roaring bull market that we've been enjoying. I'm less optimistic. I think we may be sliding into a longer-term recession, with Y2K in many ways being a catalyst to trigger a lot of other things that are wrong with the economy. But that remains to be seen. But I would say by the end of the year 2000, we won't be thinking at all about blackouts or brownouts or things of that sort. We'll be coping with whatever the economic fallout is from all of this.
Well, one reason why I can't argue much with you about your prognosis or your prognostication about where the economy is going to be is because I think we all agree that the other countries, Russia and other third world type countries are going to have a lot of problems with Y2K. Many of those countries are already in trouble.
Yeah.
Their economies is hurting our economy.
And the reason we haven't seen it is that there's still a flight to capital. People are moving their investments
right
over here, which has been terrific for us. But I think eventually it'll catch up to us.
It's very interesting. Ed, thank you very much for joining us today. As you did last time, you did a great job, and I'm looking forward to having you back on again.
Terrific. Thanks very much. You know, good luck with your own Y2K stuff.
Thank you, sir. Okay. And folks, that's Ed Yurden, the author of Time Bomb 2000. I recommend you check it out. He's a good guy. It's a good book. And check out his website, too. It's Yurden.com. I got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Barbara Weltman is.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.